Cellist Afra Harnoy has a new recording out, and it celebrates Newfoundland, the people and the culture there. This is a place where she had never been until just a few years ago. She and her new husband decided to buy a house there, make a life there, and they love it, and they wanted to celebrate it. And that's what you're going to be hearing about on their new recording, On the Rock. I'm Julie Amacher, and this is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. Thank you so much, Afra, for taking this time to talk with me about your new recording. Before we dive into that, I was looking at your bio and I realized that there's some things I overlooked in our last conversation, like some of the incredible cellists you have worked with over the years, one in particular, Mstislav Rostropovich. And I was wondering if you had any memorable stories that you could share with us about working with Rostropovich, either just as him as a person, or maybe as what kind of a teacher he was to work with.
Well, it's interesting because the first time I met him, my teacher at the time had arranged for me to come and meet him in his hotel room. And I was about 10 years old, and he was kind of impatient with my teacher and said, you know, I don't really have time for this, but I'll listen to her for about 5 minutes. And I was a little bit on edge because I didn't know what to expect. I thought, okay, you know, he doesn't really have time for me. I come into this hotel room and he's got his little Yorkshire Terrier on the bed and I'm very nervous and I start playing for him. And about 2.5, 3 hours later, you know, we've had this amazing lesson where he's talked about everything. And he actually made the quote that I think went into my bio when I was quite young, saying that I have everything that makes a great cellist. But he gave me all these incredible things to work on. And he was the first person who made me aware of the fact that I'm not the only person playing when I'm playing a sonata or a concerto. And I have to know the other parts really, really well. I have to be able to know what the pianist or the orchestra, every single person in the orchestra is doing so that I can make the music whole.
Wow.
And that was a huge gem. And then every time he came to Toronto after that, we would have a lesson together. And it's interesting too, because the person who ended up being my main teacher was William Pleath. And Rostropovich actually told me that William Pleath is the greatest teacher he's ever seen. So it kind of went from him to William Pleath. And amazing experience meeting him and spending time with him, and very inspirational.
That's amazing. And it became kind of a lifelong opportunity for you. That's so cool. I'm glad I asked that. Also, I know you had a chance to participate in at least one master class with Jacqueline Dupré. Do you remember that? And can you tell me anything about it?
With Jacqueline Dupré, I'd actually seen her play in Toronto when I was a little girl. And she was my idol, being a female cellist. And I remember I drew a picture of her while she was playing, and I gave it to her backstage, and she was very touched. Unfortunately, the next time I saw her, she was already in a wheelchair, disabled with MS. And I knew I was going to be having master classes with her. And I was, you know, being a very sensitive person, I was worried that I would kind of burst into tears. So I ended up going to see her narrating Peter and the Wolf at Royal Festival Hall in London, England, so I could kind of get used to seeing her in the wheelchair and come to terms with it. And I'm glad I did that, because she was so vibrant and energetic and full of life. And by the time I came to the master classes, I was able to deal with that. And she was very inspiring. She was singing the lines because she couldn't play the cello, but you couldn't feel that, you know, she was in any way disabled other than the fact that she was in the wheelchair. She was a very strong personality. And very inspiring as well.
Your 44th recording is called On the Rock. Why? What is the rock? You're actually playing on the rock on the cover of your CD. Tell me about what this recording is about.
Well, the rock is kind of a slang or nickname for Newfoundland, the province of Newfoundland. And my husband and I actually moved here about 2 years ago. We absolutely fell in love with the place, the physical beauty of the place, the culture, the people, the music, the food, everything. It was just a perfect oasis for us to base out of for our crazy, hectic touring lifestyle. And we were working on a project at that point called Back to Bach, which was the first album my husband and I made here in our home, in our studio, using multi-tracking. And we had just finished doing that, and we decided to go on a little road trip. We had a little seed of an idea that we wanted to make an album based on Newfoundland or Newfoundland music, Newfoundland culture. And we spent that little road trip researching and listening to as much music as we could and stopping in little towns and going into pubs and, you know, saturating ourselves with the music. And we came up with a list of music that Mike and I thought could be beautifully arranged to suit the cello. We had some help from Bob Hallett as well, who's from the group Great Big Sea, and he ended up being on the album. Our hope with the album was to kind of be true and respectful to the Newfoundland tradition, but also share my love of this music through the voice of the cello. So the music had to be suitable for that. And I think we came up with a beautiful collection of songs that really tell a story. And they don't only tell a story of Newfoundland. I think it's kind of a universal story for any seaside or oceanside community. I mean, it has the love and the longing and the ballads and the pub culture and the fun, and it has everything. So we're so thrilled with this album.
You have traveled the globe, yet you had never been to Newfoundland until Mike and you went there. I think, did you honeymoon there, or you went there shortly after you reunited after being apart for many years? What was it about the place that made you fall in love with it?
Well, we came here for a vacation, and every day I was blown away by what an incredible place it was. I mean, it just, you know, 10 minutes away from downtown, you could go for an amazing hike and look out at the ocean. All the people I met were so warm and friendly. Everything was welcoming. It was very low stress compared to most of the places that I'd visited and lived in. Every restaurant we went to in this tiny place was world-class food. We walk into a random pub somewhere and the quality of the music blew me away. I mean, the quality of the musicians and the music. And I mean, it was within days that we decided to start looking for a house here. And we found the perfect house, which is on a lake. I've always wanted to live on water. It's on a lake and you can look out. The place where I practice is a kind of a bay window in our bedroom, and I can look out and see eagles flying across the lake. And, you know, and every day the weather is so different that it's like watching a painting, an ever-changing painting. So, I mean, we really just fell in love with it, and both of us. I mean, my husband actually spent time here growing up, but had moved away, but we both felt it was the right place for us to make a home. And it's also 10 minutes from the airport and 10 minutes from downtown. I mean, it couldn't be more ideal.
Wow, it sounds really inspiring too, which has been the case for you during the COVID pandemic. I mean, where some musicians have gone through a period of not practicing or making music at all, being discouraged by not being able to be in front of the public, you and Mike decided to dive into this project. And you've described it a little bit. Let's dive into some of the individual pieces. It opens with She's the Swallow. Which is a Newfoundland traditional song. Who was the folklorist who discovered it, and why is it so important to that area?
It's one of the first songs that I heard from the traditional Newfoundland music. And I'm not sure what its origins are, but I mean, I've heard it in so many different interpretations, and it seemed like it had to be on the album. I mean, it's just one of those pieces. And I think the kind of jazzy rendition that Mike came up with really, really works well for the cello.
one of the challenges that Mike faced as the arranger was trying to figure out how to be true to the pieces and yet put it in context for your instrument. How was he able to do that? What were some of the challenges he faced?
Well, I think having worked with me on Back to Bach, he kind of knew what I was capable of, and I'd always kind of liked to go out of my comfort zone. So he really had no limitations. And, you know, there's things in here that are very classically oriented. There's things that are very jazzy. There's some pop elements. And he pushed my comfort zone a little bit. We did some fiddling, which I'd never done before, which is brutally hard on the cello, but I had a lot of fun. And I had some help from Kendall Carson, who's the fiddler on this album, and she showed me some fiddling techniques, which was a lot of fun learning and preparing. We were actually very lucky because all the guests on the album did their parts before this whole COVID pandemic crazy time happens. We were actually leaving for a 6-week tour, and we wanted to get all the guests on the album. And we had bare bones of the accompaniment at that point. We had only the bare bones of the cello part. So we had everyone recorded. And then when we came back in March and the whole world shut down, we could actually take our time and with a lot of love and care, tend to each piece separately and make it the best that we possibly could. And we were so lucky to have people like Alan Doyle. My daughter Amanda Cash sings on Saltwater Joys, she has the perfect voice for that.
I was just about to ask you that. How did she end up collaborating with you? Is she a professional singer? Is that what she does?
My daughter is actually a student in California, in Berkeley, since she wants to go into law. But she's always been a very natural musician. She played the cello for quite a long time and got to a very high level, but decided she didn't want to pursue that. And she writes her own music and plays the guitar. But all of these things are really a hobby for her. She's never thought of being a professional musician. But I always loved listening to her beautiful voice. And when we were thinking of including Saltwater Joys, and we listened to many different interpretations, I thought, I want a young voice. I want someone who's sitting there at this small oceanside community trying to decide if they want their future to be in the big city or if they want to stay here where it's comfortable and cozy and warm and beautiful. And I immediately thought of her voice being perfect for this.
Just to wake up in the morning to the quiet of the cove and to hear Aunt Bessie talking to herself.
And as it turns out, you know, she was a little skeptical. You know, I don't know if I can do this, but she came over here for Christmas and ended up recording it here in the studio, and it perfect timing.
That's really special. The cello and the flugelhorn are in a very sweet dialogue in a tune called Donald, Willie, and His Dog. It's almost like the two instruments are courting. It's very fun. Tell me about that piece.
It's funny that you say that the two instruments are courting, because Mike and I were actually just thinking of making a video of this piece. And what we thought of was kind of this very medieval courting scene of, you know, the cello and the flugelhorn being these two lovers who approach each other tentatively and then end up dancing together and walking off into the sunset. We're not quite sure how we're going to do the video, but that's exactly what we were thinking of, a medieval dance.
St. John's Waltz and Kara's Waltz, as I was listening to those two pieces that are interwoven together in a track, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, are you borrowing from Bach there?
There's actually a funny story about St. John's Waltz. During the pandemic, while Mike and I were busy working on this album, every once in a while we'd make a little goofy video and put it on YouTube. I mean, something completely crazy, always including good music, but usually something comical. And I woke up one morning and I said, Mike, you wouldn't believe I had this crazy dream that I was sitting in my pajamas with my big fuzzy bunny slippers playing the prelude to the Bach suite. And then our stuffed animal whale that we have downstairs crept upstairs and attacked me while Jaws music was playing. So he looked at me and he said, "We've got to make a video." So we spent the day filming the video and also recording all the music. So I did the Bach cello suite, and I also played the double bass for the first time in my life to try to get that kind of deep sound. And Mike was playing all different instruments. And we came up with this goofy video, which is a lot of fun. But this was while Mike was working on the arrangement of St. John's Waltz. If anyone actually wants to find these goofy videos, it's on my YouTube channel. So it's Ofra Harnoy YouTube, I guess, is the channel link. But while he was working on this, he sat down at the piano and he said, "Well, what do you think of starting with a Bach-like beginning? Like not exactly the Bach suite and a slightly different rhythm, but almost Bach-like. And it melds together so beautifully with the rock and roll voice of Alan Doyle and this incredible St. John's Waltz." And we tried it out, and it was absolutely perfect.
Oh, the harbor lights are gleaming, and the evening is still and dark, and the seagulls are all dreaming, seagull dreams, Amherst Rock, and the mist is slow.
So that was amazing. And then Alan Doyle, who, he actually asked if we wanted to include the Kara's Waltz, which was, I think it was written for, was it a dancer from
the Chieftains?
With the Chieftains, yeah. It was actually written for her by Maureen Ennis and Alan Doyle. So that sounded so beautiful on the cello, and we included that. And then we also had fun making a video of this piece as well.
My heart is on the highway, oh, but still I'm bound for sea. All the planes, they fill the skyway, and all the trains roll swift and free.
Let me fish off Cape St. Mary's. As I listened to that one, I thought, wow, here I can imagine the big band experience that Mike must have had earlier with some of these incredible performers. And this is a song that actually came together pretty quickly. Would you like to talk more about that?
Well, it's actually the very first piece that I heard coming here to The Rock, coming to Newfoundland. And loved it so much that instead of sending a paper wedding invitation for our wedding, Mike and I actually recorded this as a duet and put pictures of ourselves and sent it to all the guests for our wedding. And then last year, we actually did an arrangement for voice, piano, flugelhorn, cello, and orchestra with the Newfoundland Symphony, which Mike wrote the arrangement of that as well. And it just seemed a natural thing to put on the album. So it has a very rich, varied instrumental part. Cello, just so beautiful, singing the main theme.
Two Ronnies features two jigs, and Mike is playing solo flugelhorn and piccolo trumpet. Tell me a little bit about these jigs and how they came together.
The jigs and reels were really suggested to us mostly by Bob Hallett, because he's been involved. I mean, he knows so much about this music, and he came up with a list of jigs and reels that he thought would be perfect for the album. I mean, this is where it kind of features Mike doing all kinds of beautiful voices and having a lot of fun. there's so much unbridled enthusiasm and kitchen party kind of feeling and pub culture here that we needed to find a balance to the ballads. And I think this is a perfect piece for that.
Put a big star by because it's just so gorgeous is The Cliffs of Baccalieu, and a singer who recorded it in the early 70s with his band Ryan's Fancy is featured, Fergus O'Brien, and it's another fishing tale. Would you tell me your tale behind it, please?
Well, it's interesting how almost everything on the album happens so organically. So Mike and I just happened to walk into a pub one evening, and like I said, almost every pub that you walk into, there's good music. And Mike recognized Fergus O'Brien and, you know, remembered what a legend he is in town. And we sat down and listened to him sing and play the banjo. And of course, we came up to him and said, would you like to be on our album? And this was, again, a perfect piece. And we did drive by the Cliffs of Baccalieu. I mean, we actually experienced everything that's on the album. I mean, the physical beauty coming into the music and then being arranged and recorded here in the studio. But I thought it gave a complete contrast to some of the other voices and some of the other guests and people and music on the album.
It was hard down by the tiller as we struggled with the sheets, trying our best to haul them in a foot or two.
So it turned out to be absolutely perfect.
There's a tune called Harbor Buffet Double, and it's referred to by you and Mike as a classic kitchen party band that's putting it all together.
The Harbor Buffet Double. Well, this is one that we had Kendall Carson, the fiddler that I told you about, and she came over here and gave me some fiddling lessons, and we had Bob Hallett on the accordion. And the whole kitchen party kind of scene in the album, we tried to almost put a grouping together where you had, you know, the people coming into the pub, listening to this music. People are talking and laughing and drinking, and one song kind of ties into the other, so you're imagining yourself in one of the Newfoundland pubs. And then this kind of leads into another piece, which is Barrett's Privateers, where everyone kind of shushes, and then a band of cellists walks onto the stage and takes over the pub.
You are the band of cellists in that Stan Rogers tune.
I am the band of cellists. Yeah.
11 different tracks to form the cello band. Tell me what that experience was like.
Well, I discovered multi-tracking recording back to Bach here in the studio, and it's something I've never done before. And it was a lot of fun, but I did just perform it on an online concert with the Newfoundland Symphony and had some of the other strings doing the cello parts. But to be all the cellos in this thing was interesting because playing with other people, you kind of work off their voices, but here I have to work off each voice. And Mike is a genius with this. I mean, he knows which voices to play back for me on the audio so I can find each part and know how it relates to the other parts, because 11 cellos is a lot. So, I mean, yeah, I thought it was pretty successful.
The recording closes out with Lonely Waterloo, and it's just you and Mike, cello and solo trombone. Why was this the right way to conclude the recording?
You know, it's a very intimate thing, just having the two of us playing together. And we discovered our love of playing together and making music together very early on in our relationship. And, you know, there are very few people in the world that you can sit down with and feel about music exactly the same way and breathe the same way and sing the same way from your instruments. And I never actually really played any duets with trumpet or flugelhorn or trombone. So, I mean, it was a new experience for me. But this piece was so beautiful. And I'd read the poem. There's a poem that about lonely Waterloo. And I had this image of this misty, war-torn place with fog and kind of bodies. And, I mean, very sad, very melancholy. And then, you know, this woman weeping and crying over her love, which was lost in war. And, you know, she's asking another soldier, have you seen my love? And I mean, there's this whole beautiful story that goes behind it. And when we recorded it, both of us just knew instinctively that this is the way the album should end. It should just be the two of us, you know, with this beautiful melancholy piece.
Afro, what have you learned about yourself in the making of this recording, which is not a traditional classical recording? And maybe it isn't about the repertoire. Maybe it's something completely different that you've discovered about yourself in making this recording.
Well, I've always believed that there's no music that's off limits. I mean, I was probably one of the first people to do crossover in my teens. I'm the first one to do kind of the Beatles crossover thing. And I got a lot of flack for that at the time. You know, people had said, you know, reviewers were saying, oh, she's sold out to pop. She's not a serious classical musician. And, you know, I carried on because I believed good music is good music. And I did some stuff with Sting and Lorena McKinnitt and a whole bunch of people that were outside the classical realm. And then I also embraced the entire classical repertoire for the cello as well. So my mind is always open to, I don't only play different kinds of music. I love listening to different kinds of music, being inspired by different kinds of music. So good music is good music. And as soon as we moved here and I started hearing the heartfelt, gorgeous music that I'd never been introduced to before, I really wanted to find a way to express myself through it.
Cellist Afra Harnoy celebrating the music of Newfoundland on her new recording, On the Rock. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Special thanks to producer Valerie Kaler with technical assistance from Michael Osborne. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.